The Department of Health and Human Services reports more than 8 in 10 physicians have adopted an electronic health record, but challenges remain as the industry transforms. Dr. Keith Saltzman is a health fellow and chief medical information officer with IBM's Global Business Services and writing for the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Dr. Saltzman established the informatics division of the military health system. Keith, it's great to have you here. Thanks for coming in today and joining me. One of the major issues that we're seeing as far as electronic health records is standards. Where are we today, both inside and outside the government, with standards so that organizations can exchange health information? Thanks for coming in, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. As far as the standards, the state of standards, we're making progress. The Health and Human Services has set up the ONC Standards and Interoperability Framework working groups to take existing standards and then operationalize them and produce implementation guides that would help healthcare organizations implement their processes to effectively exchange documents and data in a standards format that they could accept between each other. The challenge is going through the detail work of taking a use case for a certain type of messaging and then translating into an operational methodology that works and is proven effective between two organizations, so that when you exchange data and documents, that more and more that information can be ingested into the receiving organization in a way that they can use it. So, for instance, your lab values would have the discrete data that could be compared between different sources and make sense. So mm-hmm. you move away from having to repeat studies, which is kind of the fee-for-service model supports that. You get paid for doing services, so you do more services.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily help the patient or the organization take care of the patient. And along with that, Health and Human Services also is changing their incentive from that model, which drove healthcare, to a reimbursement model that is moving towards outcomes and value as a reward or a payment incentive, which then supports exchanging the information.
Mm-hmm. Before we went on the air, we talked a little bit about the history of EHRs. And you said that back in the 70s and 80s, VA and the Department of Defense were kind of the leaders, not just in the government, but across the country and around the world on electronic health records. Give me kind of a thumbnail history of where we've come from to get where we are today.
Well, both agencies actually started with the same code base. The DoD uses it as CHCS, and the VA uses it as CPRS for their core electronic information system. Those have been incrementally modernized over the years, but on the outside, the commercial vendors have kind of leapfrogged over that capability and have fairly modern records. One of the challenges is that the systems were built around billing and coding rather than clinical care.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's still that gap that has to be reached for the next generation EHRs, I would say. So while the DoD and VA are both very forward-looking, they've been overcome. So they have to modernize their systems and then address the challenge of interoperability, which they've also been a leader in. We started doing work on that in 2004 when I was at Madigan. And I served in Iraq and was able to see the benefit of having information available through the DoD VA systems so that a service member in Iraq's information would get transferred to a VA facility or a DoD facility when they came back.
Mm-hmm.
The uniformity of capturing and sending that information was problematic, and that there's bugs to be worked out, but the basic concept and tenets were there. So I think the agencies are on track. They just need to really focus on accomplishing and getting that exchange of information fluid. And I think that can be a model for the country.
One of the standards issues that I've talked about on this program before is whether the standards should be driven by market-based solutions and factors, whether they should be driven by government policy and regulation, or whether there's some mix in between. A comment that you made a moment ago, I think, shed some light on that, in that you said that some of the private sector solutions are driven primarily by coding and billing versus, you didn't use the word treatment, but that was the inference that I made. And if I'm incorrect, please correct me. But that concept, if that's correct, might take one toward the idea that there should be some kind of government involvement, at least on some level, in setting the standards that everybody's going to use within the next decade or so on EHRs. Is that a fair leap on my part?
That's fair. I think the challenge comes in when you're setting a goal is telling people how to reach that goal. Mm-hmm. And that's where it becomes problematic. And you see that in practices trying to struggle with meaningful use criteria and different policy regulations that may or may not really support the end goal. And so you have to be careful and take feedback so that your policy isn't inhibiting forward progress. I think that's a risk. And then looking at what is policy for, policy essentially should be for helping facilitate mission accomplishment. And if you look at the mission of healthcare in the country, that sometimes our policies don't help that mission.
You write in this piece for the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which we have linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, taking innovation from other industries and adapting it, not just transposing it, to healthcare leverages the greatest form of flattery, imitation. I've heard that saying over and over again. How do you see that applying in the area of electronic health records, Keith?
Well, if you look at your iPhone, for example, the apps and everything, you don't really have to take too much effort to learn how to use them, and you're kind of compelled to use them.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask people if they're compelled to use their EHRs, I think there would be a resounding no, we're not. You know, it's a tool that we have to support rather than supports us at this stage in history. That will change and improvements will come, but we really have to overcome the complexity of the healthcare environment and look at, again, linking the user to the solution so that your design is centered around what helps solve the problem for the user, and then business process reengineering, where you take a technical solution and integrate it into the workflow so that you're taking into account and leveraging the technical solution in a way that it really enhances and adds value to the process.
And that's going to happen, it strikes me, at an intersection, not just of healthcare management, electronic health records, and so forth, but also a customer service and user experience, which may or may not be, in an IT-driven world, exclusively involved with health decision makers and so on. It's going to be kind of a marriage of a number of different organizations there.
I agree. I think one of the things about the user experience is the patient at the end of receiving healthcare. The determinants of healthcare really are, you know, 10% of healthcare delivery really affects health. About 60% plus is exogenous factors and things that are patient dependent. So engaging the patient in being a part of their care is really critical. That's the opportunity to change healthcare outcomes. So reaching them through their personal health records or communications, if you look at the amount of time that the patient spends with the doctor over the course of the year, it may be an hour or two of direct face-to-face time. That leaves a lot of white space that you could reach into. So you could communicate with people through technology like cell phones, et cetera. Most people have cell phones. The homeless vet has a cell phone. Mm. The single mom who's on welfare has a cell phone. So there's a medium that you can reach them. They may not have an address, but they have a way to reach them and engage them in their healthcare decisions. So I think that's keeping that in mind, there's a huge opportunity to expand both the reach of communications about healthcare, but then influence outcomes.
Before we went on the air, you said that this transformation is inevitable, but it's going to be rough for a while. It strikes me this is a pretty radical transformation, maybe a more radical transformation than those of us on the outside looking in understand. How radical is this in your view?
If you look at how healthcare delivery has evolved in the U.S., it's, you know, the Fletcher Report in 1910 was probably the last major change. And so what we're experiencing is, okay, how do we go from analog to digital and then move the technologies to really support workflow and everything else that happens in healthcare in a way that's additive and value added? And that'll happen if you look at the cell phone industry, the banking industry. If you look back, they had the same painful processes. They're just kind of, if you weren't there, you see the benefit, but you don't really see the turmoil that went into it.
Mm-hmm.
With healthcare, it's a more complex industry. There's a lot more stakeholders that you have to account for. You have payers, providers, doctors, nurses, and then patients and caregivers. And so there's a really broad spectrum of people when you change things that you have to account for. How does that change affect them?
And that those changes all have to accommodate business practices, workflows. You've alluded to a couple of those factors, not just the relationship that I as the patient have with you as the doctor and how you provide information to me. There are all these other people touching it.
Exactly. And one of the barriers that's been introduced is you put a computer screen between a patient and a doctor, and that is disruptive to communication. And so while you're able to get documentation that's legible and available 24/7, the gaining that information, you've introduced a barrier there. So it's learning how to overcome those barriers and take advantage of the benefit when reduce the risk, if you will, or the cumbersome of nature of having that introduced. So,
you suggested that this transformation will be rough for a while. How long's a while, and what does rough look like?
Well, the while, we've been at it for 11 years, maybe more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're well into it. I think there's a tipping point usually in an inflection in your transformation curve where you start to see productivity increase and ease of use and the benefit of what technology or disruption brings to the table. And I think we're there. You see some bright spots around the country in small systems that really are demonstrating the benefit of access to information. The problem is, and they have the outcomes to show that. You can look at studies and see where having the information available really makes a better outcome for the patient. The problem is that those are silos. They're islands of excellence, if you will, and those have to be linked and connected through an information exchange that's effective.
Mm-hmm. What is the data analytics piece of this look like? We talk about data a lot in government today. The government has lots of data in the healthcare area in particular. There are obviously privacy concerns about how that information is maintained and who has access to see it and what form they have access to see it. There are even privacy concerns about bulk data, where we know information about 10,000 people and not about any individual person. What's that balance look like in your view in the coming years, as particularly how the government or government organizations have ability to transmit, analyze that information to produce better outcomes for people?
The technology allows for anonymization of the data. So I think, you know, the education about how data is handled is important. The HIPAA Act and things like that have put protective measures in. As with banking industry, there's breaches, and you have to have risk mitigation to deal with those. But the data that's being generated in healthcare is being generated in silos, and, you know, terminologies are different, and there's a lot of cleansing that has to be done. Providers really haven't had the benefit of getting information back from what they've put in. As that comes about, then they'll see what the garbage in, gospel out effect has on them, and they'll start to clean up their act just by getting the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get better data. So the data that you have is, I call it dirty data. It has to be cleansed. And that'll happen as these silos of information are integrated and your data is normalized across the industry. The benefit of that is that you're going to be able to drive informed decisions both for, at the patient level, where you have genomics and all these other emerging sources of knowledge to marry up with the clinical data. You'll get better individual outcomes, but better population outcomes. So the promise is there. The journey is going to be somewhat long, but we're going down the path and we're progressing. So the outcome of absorbing the disruption of digital health care will reach a plateau of performance, decreased cost, and things like that. That's the science behind transformation. And you see it in other industries where it's happened. So you can look to that and be encouraged that it will happen and to stay the course and really focus on what problems can we solve today to advance this transformation of healthcare.
Dr. Keith Saltzman, a health fellow and chief medical officer at medical information officer with IBM's Global Business Services, writing for the IBM Center for the Business of Government under the title, How Can Providers Effectively Leverage EHRs? We just have a couple of minutes left. Keith, where do we go from here? Who are the entities that need to do something, particularly in the policymaking and standard setting realm? And what do they need to do to move the ball forward to continue to make the progress that you just alluded to a moment ago?
I think the microcosm that exists in the federal healthcare delivery system is great because it gives you a manageable population, whether it's 20, 30 million. It's a small number compared to the large number of the U.S. population. But in that ecosystem, if you solve the problem between agencies who also pay for care outside those agencies, which reaches a lot of the healthcare organizations around the country, then you have a model that can extend to the national healthcare system. And then keeping the end in mind, you want to be compatible with the international system. So I think the federal government spends either a plurality or most or a majority of the money on healthcare. So there's some onus on the federal system to solve this problem and then share that solution and in partnership with the commercial sector. But I think they have some responsibility to lead in this area and an opportunity to lead.
I appreciate your piece, and I appreciate you coming in to talk about it with me today. Thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate being here.